This is my volume one CD of multiple episodes of Preparedness Thoughts. First, my normal opening, then my normal close, and then continuous episodes, which will be spoken for about an hour. Welcome to Preparedness Thoughts by John Stephenson. We invite Jesus Christ through the Holy Spirit to guide us as we examine how our preparations can be used to preserve the life of ourselves, our family, and others. In the close, start your preparations now before there is an urgent need and what you want is hard to find. Remember to give thanks to God for the blessings that you do have. Introduction to Preparedness Thoughts. During these shows, you will have brief examinations of problems that just might be on our horizon, as well as what we can do to ease the difficulties we would be presented with. Some people will wonder why I look at so many potentially difficult situations. It is so that you can see how easy it is for bad things to happen, and then, seeing this, you will be motivated to take steps which would give comfort and preserve life. By doing this, you then show the love of God through Jesus Christ and with the Holy Spirit. After all, our God is a good God, yet both that which is good and that which is bad happens in this world. Looking back in history, mankind has had a vast number of tragedies. There were natural disasters, and there were man-caused disasters. I will primarily be looking at natural disasters. What I talk about is not to scare anybody. It is meant to look at problems we could face and how to get through those tough times. Then, having looked at ideas and information, it is completely up to you to decide what you want to do. But I hope you will take some action steps, and as a part of our decision-making process, I hope you will look at who you want to depend on to provide for your basic needs, whether you consider preparing for 3 days, 3 weeks, or longer. I hope you ask yourself, if you were in an emergency situation, who do you want to depend on? Yourself, your church family, or your government? Take a real look at who can do the best job of providing for you with what you want. And look at historical examples of who helps who and how well it is done. Benjamin Franklin said, "Those who fail to prepare are preparing to fail." I hope this show will motivate you to identify your concerns and then take reasonable steps to prepare for what you consider to be your just-in-case preparations. What our basic needs in any emergency are air, water, food, and warmth or shelter. For air, if it's dusty, an inexpensive particle mask or a dampened t-shirt is a quick and easy answer. For water, water is an often overlooked, but it is essential and it is heavy to store. You can store it in gallon jugs or a 55-gallon drum. It's hard to have too much water. 1 gallon per day is considered a minimum amount, and without electricity, water will eventually not come out of your tap. So definitely have some stored. Food. It is not fun to miss any meal or to go without food for a day. So have some emergency food on hand, which does not need refrigeration or cooking, as well as some which does need cooking. Warmth or shelter. Warm clothing are important, and it might be a tent that you need in case your home is damaged. Maybe fireplace wood is also a good thing for you. Give some thought to rain in case we are in the middle of a long rainstorm when some disaster happens. A radio, flashlights, and spare batteries are also great ideas to have. How long would an emergency last? Well, it could be overnight. It could be for days. It could be for weeks. After you decide what you are preparing for, then do something. Our home is where we want to have the bulk of our provisions. But we should also have a few in our cars for just in case we are stranded overnight or longer. Emergencies or disasters do not happen very often, but when they do, they are very traumatic. The pain we can avoid by having emergency provisions is so notable that we will change our ways after we go through such an event. Then we would get prepared, but save yourself the trauma and get prepared now. I was in the San Francisco earthquake, that is the Loma Prieta earthquake of 1989 in San Francisco. It was a surreal experience to hear the news of the devastation, and only battery-powered radios worked. There were freeways which collapsed and buildings which were made uninhabitable. And the downtown of San Francisco, there was no light at night except for the emergency vehicles which drove down the streets with their flashing lights on. And oh yes, there were fires in the streets where the homeless made their fires to keep warm. During the first week after this earthquake, people were cooperative and considerate. And yet I thought about if we had no modern conveniences, and there was a major earthquake or a widespread earthquake, would we revert back to conditions of the 1800s? Well, I don't know, but I thought about it, and I thought, it's better to prepare than to do nothing. In my early years, I would go camping in remote locations. This taught me that I always wanted to have some extra provisions with me, so that just in case some kind of a surprise happened, I could still get out of there and not go hungry. I have faced roads that have slid out, trees across the road, and mud, snow, and sand barriers. A few times I have awoke to find a foot of snow on my sleeping bag. Nobody knows what kind of situations we will face, but we want to have some kind of a preparation so that we can get through that rough spot. And you also will want to have an attitude that shouts, "Where there is a will, there is a way." Whether it is you or someone else in that difficult place, it is of extreme importance to give comfort and to show hope. Give comfort and show hope. This reflects the hope and comfort which God gives us in the Bible. God has also given us a rational mind to show us the importance of preparing in this life and to have preparation for the next life. Everyone has a different approach to what our preparedness needs and desires are. I urge you to look at what yours are. That is to say, what are the difficulties that you want to prepare for? And then take steps, maybe in weekly increments, to take and complete those preparations. You see, for just about everyone, it is just too difficult to prepare for everything all at once. And besides that, your ideas usually improve over time. So take steps, and you do your own preparation. Now, there are emergency preparedness kits, which are very good. Yes, they're a little expensive, but they are good. But you have to be aware they probably will not cover, not well enough, what is important to you. So make this examination now before an emergency arises. Keep those basic things in mind: air, water, food, and warmth. And all this without electricity. So batteries, a flashlight, and a radio are important. Remember, if your loved ones know that you are prepared, it will greatly reduce their anxiety about you. Likewise, if your loved ones are prepared, it will greatly reduce your anxiety about them. All in all, it is good to be prepared. What level of preparedness do you want for your life? I know, it depends on how immediate your need is and what the consequences of your not having what you need is. Well, I hope you examine this. Maybe you will think of this as having insurance. Because we all have insurance on our car, our home, our appliances maybe, and for some of us have life insurance. So why not have food insurance? Where you get something that is real for the money you spend. These days, more and more people are talking about some sort of a natural disaster being closer than we think, and with greater consequences than we are considering. Some event which would occur without warning, and then suddenly there is no gasoline, no groceries, and no ATM. And we don't know how long that period of time would last. And even if we did have a warning, what you want could very well be sold out or unavailable. You see, the grocery store shelves and the hardware store items are emptied within an hour or two of any real emergency situation. I know that in 2011, when I heard about the Japanese Fukushima nuclear plant being hit by a tidal wave, well, within 2 hours, I went to the store to buy potassium iodide tablets, and they were sold out everywhere. They were even sold out of kelp capsules, which have a small amount of iodine in them. You see, in a nuclear event, you take pure iodine so that your thyroid gland does not absorb the bad radioactive iodine that is caused by the nuclear event. In that way, you preserve your healthy thyroid gland. So think about these things ahead of time. Prepare ahead of time. So what will you want? Well, it all depends on you. You will want a medical kit. And what will you have in it? Well, it will depend on what you know how to use. To me, the very basic must-haves are plenty of cloth medical tape and gauze pads, as well as plenty of triple antibiotic ointment. You will also want ibuprofen and burn ointment. And remember, if you have any prescription medicine, you will want to have some of that too. You will have to think about it and see what suits you, and then see what basics means to you, because everybody has their own ideas. And as an example of what some of the basics might be, well, I think about that Southern California Northridge earthquake a few years back. It occurred in the early morning, and many windows broke with that earthquake. So when people got out of bed to see what was going on, quite a few got up and they were cut by the window glass on the floor. So in this case, preparedness would also mean having slippers next to your bed. You can't prepare for every situation, but some preparedness is better than none. So you try to look ahead to ease the difficulties that there just might be. This radio program often addresses the physical aspects of preparedness. But just now we will look at an often overlooked area, which is money. We use it practically every day. But what would happen if our money inflates so much that it does not remain stable? To prevent dangerous inflation, our founding fathers wrote into our U.S. Constitution that our money would only be of a precious, or a semi-precious metal. But that was changed so that paper money came to represent gold or silver. And today, our paper money is valued at whatever the international money market and the privately owned central banks around the world say that the U.S. dollar is worth. Now, the central banks include our own Federal Reserve, which works closely with the U.S. government, but it is, in fact, a privately owned entity. Okay, back to the basics. Inflation leads to unstable money, and this instability is reflected in society's instability in day-to-day living conditions. In many societies, this instability leads to shortages of food and materials. That, in turn, causes a destabilized society, and that helps to destabilize a government. All of this means that the government will get more control and the people will get less control, or you could say less freedom. Now today, for the last 8 years, the U.S. money supply has multiplied four times. There are four times more dollars than there were 8 years ago. Now there is a principle that the more of something you have, the less is each one's value. And this means significant inflation will occur. So, what are we to do? Well, how about if we have a supply of our normal use items which don't go bad, like soap, toothbrushes, and toilet paper, and tools or hardware items, and of course, food like grains, sugar, and salt, and a manual grain grinder. You'll need that for the grains. Another thing we could do is to have a skill or learn a skill which can be sold or bartered. And that means in a moral and conscientious way. So you could be a housekeeper or a carpenter or some kind of a repair person. Those are good skills to have. Let these ideas, which I present to you today, encourage your own ideas, because your own ideas are the ones which will most easily last in your thinking, and you can follow through on those. And one word of caution is that as we examine these potential problems, we still want to stay positive. After all, God put us right here, right now, because we were born for a time such as this, and we can get through whatever is coming away. We will be prudent, and we will get through it, and we will be faithful to Jesus Christ along the way. We want to celebrate the life which God has given us. We want to be thankful, and we want to look at the world around us. We want to examine reality, and not to be in fear, but see what there really is. There are some dangers we face from humanity, and there are some dangers which we face in the form of natural disasters. It is natural disasters which this program most often will look at. The Earth has a core of molten rock and a very thin crust over that, above which there is our atmosphere which protects us here on Earth from the radiation and the meteors. It is the movement of this Earth's crust which I want to address today, and pretty much that means earthquakes and volcanoes, and perhaps a tsunami. Each of these are increasing in their occurrences in recent years and recent decades. So to me, it only makes sense to have some preparations just in case our normal lives are disrupted. A volcano can darken the sky and cause our automobiles to stop functioning. An earthquake can shake your home apart, and it can cause the delivery of electricity or water to cease. And there is the Yellowstone Super Caldera volcano If that erupts, the experts tell us volcanic ash could cover 1/3 to 2/3 of the United States of America. And that would completely disrupt transportation of food and materials in the United States. I don't know what we could even produce then. It would be very difficult. Scientists say that the same thing for the New Madrid Fault, earthquake fault, which goes about from Washington, D.C., and maybe halfway across the United States to the west. It's another potentially great problem. We don't know when any of this will happen, but they say it will. Also, there is a more urgent danger from the southern San Andreas earthquake fault. And there's a danger from the continental subduction zone off the coast of Oregon and Washington State, and a little bit into Northern California. These are potentially gigantic problems. Anything can happen, and certainly we do not know when. But everyone can do at least something to have some level of preparedness for that just-in-case situation. In this episode, this next episode, we will really get to the edge of reasonable or unreasonable thoughts. And we will take a quick look at what some few people are suggesting as possible threats or disasters. Maybe you will look at some of these ideas as being just too unlikely, or maybe you will see that they have a serious potential of happening. My hope is that you will give some thought to preparedness, and hopefully these unusual ideas will stimulate some thought. For instance, a meteor could strike Earth. Now, we say that'll never happen, but it has happened several times before in Earth history. Similarly, Planet X, which is also called Nibiru, could come by Earth and disrupt Earth's atmosphere or tectonic plates. According to legend, this has happened before, and now there are a few people who claim that it is approaching Earth. That's just another one of the potential ideas or problems. We also could have a massive volcanic eruption. Yellowstone is the most likely candidate. But there have been other earthquakes, and one of them was Krakatoa in Indonesia in 1883 that had an eruption. And it was said to be heard halfway around the earth when it erupted. We could have a massive crop failure, such as was caused by a plant rust or a fungus. This could happen to wheat, and this could happen to potatoes or other crops. It did happen in the mid-1800s, and it was called the Irish Potato Famine, and it certainly changed the world. Massive anarchy could happen in the United States. Oh, it happened in the 2014 Ferguson, Missouri riots, or the 1965 Watts, Los Angeles riots, or in 1932, the U.S. World War I military veterans rioted in Washington, D.C., because they did not get the benefits they were promised by the U.S. government. See, these are unlikely, but they could happen. It's just as unlikely that we could have a military invasion of the United States. And yet that did happen. Great Britain occupied Washington, D.C. during the War of 1812. Some people even suggest a new order is taking over control of this country. And as an example of impossible events, they ask, why did Building 7 completely collapse on 9/11? It was a 47-story building which was not hit by a plane, and yet it completely collapsed in a free fall, just like the two World Trade Towers collapsed. So you see, things that are unlikely to happen still can happen, and we don't know if they will happen or when they will happen. But the point is that strange and predictable things do happen. Surprises do happen, and they can disrupt our everyday life. So with the uncertainties in life, let's get a little prepared. Next episode. Plain old simple problems can happen in life, and they can be quite disruptive, even though they're small. Let's consider a few which have all happened to me. Like a paper cut on your finger. It slows you down. Or a burn on your thumb. Or somehow there is a cut which bleeds instead of closes up. All sorts of things are quite annoying. They're not a serious problem, but they sure do slow you down. I've had a headache and no aspirin. I've slipped in the shower and hit my elbow. That slowed me down for a whole day. I've sewed a button and accidentally put the needle into my thumb. I've needed to make a quick trip to the store, but the gas gauge was on empty. Something was left in the car at night, but I didn't have a flashlight to see what it was. The bicycle had a flat tire, and there was no air pump. The phone charger got chewed up by a pet, or it got ran over by a car. I needed a Band-Aid, but the first aid kit was not where it was supposed to be. Or all the Band-Aids were gone. I locked the keys in the car, and the spare key was not where it was supposed to be. The same thing for the house key. What about when you need to stay overnight somewhere unexpectedly? Did you bring your toothbrush or a change of clothes? Did you ever lose or break your glasses? Surely some of these things have happened to you. Our problems can be small, but they can also be minimized with a little forethought and planning. Just a little thought or a little planning goes away, a long way, when you have a need. So think of these situations in advance and prepare. Have you ever read a book where someone says, and I just sat around there in stunned silence? I think about all of us have had something like that happen to us. Something happened that we were not ready for, and our response is stunned silence. Something happens right in front of us, and we just about freeze there right on the spot. We want to say something, but we just can't get the words out of our mouth. I can tell you from personal experience how embarrassing that was when it happened to me. But these things do occasionally happen. And what I'm trying to relate here is that these things do occasionally happen. And when we are faced with an unbelievable crisis, too often we either freeze in place for a short moment, but that moment does feel incredibly long, or we react in some way that we later wish our reaction had been more thoughtful, just a little different. This is our human condition, and unless we have had intentional forethought or specific training, like the emergency personnel get, we just might freeze in place when there is a serious situation right in front of us. And this freezing in place can happen if you are right on the scene or if you are watching a traumatic event on the television. You don't want to be like a frozen statue in an emergency. You want to be able to move and act. This inability to act has been studied for decades, and it is understood by trauma psychologists and trauma workers. My point is, firstly, you want to have the preparation that you need for an emergency event beforehand. And secondly, you want to have examined what reactions and plans you might consider if there should be some kind of an emergency right in front of you. And I say this because I do not want you to be consumed with preparations or with fear, but I want you to have some preparedness, because preparedness does displace fear and panic. I advocate having a certain amount of preparedness so that you will have peace about you in the event of some kind of a future emergency. I want you to have confidence that you will be able to get through a time of difficulty. I would ask each person to examine what they want to prepare for, and then take regular steps to complete that preparation. As you prayerfully are guided to do so, I want to raise concerns or possibilities, and then have you seek and find your answers, and you make your preparations accordingly. And don't be hard on yourself if you fall short of your expectations. That is pretty standard. It is far more important that you take steps to prepare than for you to do nothing. If you do nothing, you have already determined how prepared you will be. And if you take steps towards preparedness, and there is a great need, you will be glad for every step of preparation that you have taken. Perhaps water and food are the most important disaster preparedness items. Water and food. Today, let's have a closer look at water. Everybody needs water daily for our bodies to function properly, our digestive system, and our brain. They especially need water to function properly. 1 gallon per day, per person, is the amount recommended for both drinking and cooking. Of course, people have survived on less water. But if you want to maintain good health, 1 gallon per person per day is what you want to have. And by the way, you will also need water for bathing and for flushing the toilet. There are several disaster scenarios which could make our water stop. Perhaps the easiest to consider is a large earthquake with a long fault line. This could break countless water lines. If this were to happen, do you think your home area would be among the first lines to be repaired? Probably not. And in such a case, you could easily be without water service for a month. And the roads might not be passable either for days or for weeks. So you won't be going to the grocery store to get your water. Now, where would you get water in the case of such a disaster? Your water company could distribute gallon jugs from a central location, but you still have to carry it home. Or maybe it would be from a water truck somewhere. But you would still need a container to put the water in, and you still have to take it into your home. And if the situation were really desperate, you might have to get your water from a nearby river. I know these are very unlikely situations, but I also know there are intelligent people who consider how to solve major disaster problems like this. There are different ways to treat water to make your water safe to drink. Boiling is a good option. Boil it for 3 minutes. Or you can add 8 drops of regular unscented bleach to a gallon of water. Or if the water is cloudy, you double that to 16 drops. And then you let it stand for 30 minutes before you drink it. Backpacking water filters are another good option. Also, there is the ultraviolet stereo pen. It has ultraviolet light. It doesn't sterilize your water, but it does kill. That is, it makes the organisms in it not multiply. So it's a good system too. And one other method is, if you have nothing else, you get a quart or a half gallon of water in a clear container, and you leave it in the sunlight for 6 to 8 hours. It has to be on a day where the sunlight is bright. You can't have it on a cloudy day. But the sunlight, that is the ultraviolet light in the sunlight, slowly does clean the water, and it makes it drinkable. Well, now after all this talk about putting or getting your water safe to drink, you can see how very much easier it is to store your water. Just get some of your tap water and store it. It will store for years if it is kept out of direct sunlight. One other little mention is that in case you didn't treat your water properly, you will want to have plenty of anti-diarrheal tablets on hand. Sometimes you just need that anyway, and everybody should have that on hand in their emergency kit. Anti-diarrheal tablets are important. Lastly, consider your water in a food-grade plastic 55-gallon drum. You should be able to find one. They are around. You can get one used but cleaned, and they are a good idea. After air and water, food is the body's greatest need. Today we will look at food storage. Typically, what we want from food is the pleasure of eating it. But today I am looking at food that stores well and also sustains life. Every person has their own idea about what foods they will find acceptable. So I will give you some ideas, but you will have to figure out exactly what is acceptable to you. The tastier foods cost more money. So, to save money, I will look at the very basic foods first. I will also say that we don't know when an emergency will arise. So we will look at food that lasts a long, long time. And to me, those very basics are wheat, sugar, salt, and oil. Wheat, sugar, salt, and oil. You will also want a manual wheat grinder of a pretty good quality and a large cast iron pot with a lid. And flavorings. You can get whatever you like, but of course pepper and vanilla are just pretty basic ones, but you can get all sorts of flavorings, and you should have some around for your emergency supply. You can change some of this list according to your taste. Some people will want to have white rice too. Don't get brown rice. That does not store well. But white rice does. However, its nutritional level is to be questioned. But it's good. Now, other people will want to have honey instead of sugar. Or instead of any old oil, they'll want olive oil. It's up to you, but those are the basics. Many people will want beans, and beans are good, but they do not store as well as wheat because they give off gas, and so you will want to store them separately in their own containers. Another good addition is some kind of commercially dehydrated fruits or vegetables. They often come in number 10 cans, which are the large size cans. For your food storage of these things, you would probably want a 55-gallon drum. They work pretty well. You will want the kind with a removable lid. And as I said, the more appeal a food has, the more expensive it is. Now, because we are all looking at cost, we are all cost conscious, conscious. I am only looking at the basic foods here. And again, that is wheat, sugar, salt, and oil. And also a manual wheat grinder. Don't forget your large cast iron pot with a lid. And flavorings is just as simple as pepper and vanilla. Another excellent item is a propane camp stove and plenty of extra propane. You can get propane in a 5-gallon jug. The quantity of food depends on your comfort level. You know, it's whatever you choose. It's your choice. And it does amount to quite a lot of food. FEMA says that one person for 1 year will consume 275 pounds of wheat if that is your primary food. And if you had 275 pounds of wheat, well, that's a lot. But if you consider your spouse, a few children, a couple of friends, and maybe a neighbor or two, you know, that 1 year supply of wheat could easily become a 30-day supply of wheat. The most simple ways of storing your wheat or other grains will include some kind of an insect deterrent, like an oxygen absorber, which is commercially available. And there are other simple ways, like adding diatomaceous earth to your grains or putting sodium dioxide from the dry ice into the grains. Those are very good to overcome the insects. There's many ways to overcome a variety of concerns. You'll need to put in a little time into your own answers because everybody thinks of different ideas and has different concerns, including how much what you do, what it will cost, because that's something we all have to be aware of, the cost. Well, I conclude by asking, do you want to take care of yourself or do you want others to take care of you? Surely your government can take care of you, but the government does not have a great history of taking care of people. And we can look at Hurricane Katrina as an example. Took about a couple of months there to have them really step in with disaster aid. And we can look at various people groups in either other countries or our own country, and we can see that typically government does not do the best job. So I say, take care of yourself. But this means you must plan to do something, and then you must do something. Okay, so let's talk a little more about food storage, and I want to talk about getting through some difficult times. Of course, the choices are up to you, but I see the basic foods as wheat, sugar, salt, and oil, and flavorings, and a reasonably good manual wheat grinder, and a large cast iron pot with a lid on it, and propane for your propane camp stove. Multivitamins are also good. And I specified a cast iron pot because your body will get the iron it needs from cast iron. Matches are another necessary item. So some people are sensitive to wheat, and if that's the case, you can buy an ancient grain like spelt or emmer. They cost about twice as much as wheat, but there's something you can store and eat. It's good choices. The other great use for wheat is to have wheat sprouts or wheatgrass juice. This is a great source year-around for the chlorophyll which your body needs and which we normally get from green vegetables or leafy green vegetables. But wheatgrass is just relatively easy to do if you're storing the wheat. Remember, you are eating more for your health than it is for your pleasure. So consider wheatgrass juice. It takes about 2 weeks to soak and to grow your wheatgrass. In stressful times or difficult times, you can expect to need and use a lot of calories. So sugar and oil are some of the easiest sources of calories, even though we don't want them now in our current life. But in difficult times, we will want them. For every 100 pounds of wheat you buy, you'll want to get plenty of sugar because we're used to it and it is calories. Same for oil. So 100 pounds of wheat, 25 pounds of sugar, 2 gallons of oil, and 5 pounds of iodized salt. And I say iodized salt because everybody needs iodine. Oh, and a few people are concerned about a nuclear event. If you're concerned about that, get potassium iodide tablets so that your thyroid gland fills up with the good iodine instead of the radioactive iodine. After the Chernobyl Russian nuclear meltdown in 1986, many of the local Russian people lost their thyroid gland because they absorbed the radioactive iodine. So another part of food storage is to have food stored for your pet, too. And certainly in a pinch, you can feed your pet bread, some for them and some for you. Well, whatever your natural disaster, it's up to you to examine those possibilities, evaluate them, and decide what it is you want to prepare for. It's sure that if you do not look, you will not see, and you will not prepare. So have a look at these things. You don't want to starve. You don't want to wait for anyone else's to help you. You want to be able to provide for yourself. So look and see what you can prepare for your own self and for the charity to other people. As Christians, we do want to help other people. We want to be the ones giving help and not asking for help. And I know there's plenty of people today who rightly ask for and receive government assistance, and that is good and it is right for them. Again, our Christian standard is to help other people. So we want to be able to help people. And in order to help people, we need to have extra. We need to have something to give. Scientists who study the Earth say that the United States, we have several very major earthquake faults which could have an earthquake at any time. There's the Yellowstone caldera or supervolcano. That's a real possibility. And there are other ones, other volcanoes and other earthquakes. So if there is a global food shortage, we will want to have food. You know, ask yourself what you want. Is it for months or is it for weeks or days? I don't know. You have to examine that and figure it. And of course, we don't know when such an event would happen. Is it days or is it weeks? I don't know. Nobody knows. Now and then, a city will have a garbage strike. How would you deal with the garbage if you're garbage were not collected for a week or a month or longer? Historically, or should I say hopefully, we have a yard and a plot of dirt nearby because soil is an important part of waste disposal. Today, we'll have a quick look at the big picture and the small picture of waste disposal. The big picture is that you have a cycle of eating and eliminating, of decay and regrowing of our food, and thus we have the nutritional building blocks for strengthening our mind and body, which then is more capable of giving praise and worship to our God, the God of the Bible. Right now, we only have enough time to recognize the elements of the cycle and not enough time to examine the specifics of that cycle. But if we needed to figure it all out, we could. So very quickly, the short, small picture is if there is a few days where we have a system breakdown, we can put our waste into a well-sealed plastic bag and wait until garbage collection resumes. The other, the medium picture, is that if there is a social breakdown lasting some months, we will want to get through it in a way which does not harm or degrade our long-term health potential. The common methods of garbage disposal are to burn it or to bury it. And that which does not decay will be burned, like plastic, but you'll have to make sure it's thoroughly burned. And you'll have to do it while fire danger is acceptably low. The lesson here is use plastic sparingly. Often enough, we will be burying waste, and that's the best option. But I want to emphasize the importance of burying the waste deep enough. There are two important health elements here. One is preserving the purity of your groundwater supply, and the other is not transferring bad bacteria, primarily by flies. Here again, the answer is to bury your waste deep enough, not where it could migrate into the water supply. And you also don't want it to be dug up by a domestic or a wild animal. All of these considerations must include both dry weather and intensely rainy weather. In general, bury it is a good idea. You will want it 3 feet deep for something the size of a dog and 6 or more feet for something the size of a large animal, cow, or if you have a garbage heap. And yes, that is a lot to dig. And consider that the wet waste requires more to deal with than the dry waste. I hope your neighbors are as concerned as you are so that your neighborhood does not get a bad stink to it. Surely you will realize that this applies to human elimination waste as well. Well, I'm sort of sorry for bringing up a subject like this and the problems we could face. But if we never look at some of the problems we could face, we might not see the solutions either. So a little forethought goes a long way. We could have a problem like a garbage strike, and we could have a problem like an electrical grid failure. And let me just say that there has been a congressional task force that recently said if our electrical grid goes down for 1 year, they expect that 60% or more of our U.S. population would die within 1 year if the electricity were not restored. You know, that is just hard to imagine, but if we never think about it, we will never seek a solution. Now, for whatever is coming, I want you to choose life, and I want you to have the understanding to live and live abundantly in this life and the next. Hey, you remember that story, that childhood story of the little red hen? I do. The story asks, who will do the many steps of work which it takes to make the bread which we eat? Like gathering and grinding and baking the wheat to make the bread. No one would help. The little red hen had only enough to feed her little family and baby chicks. If all those who did not help, well, they did not share in eating the bread. So, provide some help. We can understand the theme of the story. It's kind of like the Bible saying, those who do not work shall not eat. And again, I ask the question, how prepared should we be? I don't know. But it does make me think of the many people who I have talked about being prepared to. I talk about just having the most basic food supplies for that just-in-case situation. So, back to that story, I think of the dog, the pig, the cow, and the story of the little red hen, how none of them could help or would help. I think of some future day when people will want to eat, but they did not store up when they could. When I talk about storing up the basics, well, most people will say something like, oh, I hope nothing bad happens. Or some people will say, if something bad happens, I guess I'll just die. And some other people say, I don't want to live if such a calamity were to occur. Or they say, God will provide. Well, I think God did provide. He provided you with a mind and a body by which you can foresee a time of difficulty and prepare for it. If you are that person who sacrificed your extra blessings of today to make provision for an unknown tomorrow, what portion are you willing to give to those who are hungry tomorrow? Charity is right and proper, and so is providing for your own. This question is a struggle because we don't know if a calamity would last a day or a month or a year. It might last a year and a half. And by the way, I say a year and a half because that's how long a calamity could last if we were to have a crop failure and we had to plant, grow, and harvest a crop. We would need a year and a half. Anyway, you will want to examine these questions before a situation requires a quick answer. So do that. Ask this question and think about it. You might want to think about it with your intellect more than your heart. You can change your mind and you can do things different if you want to, but come to some sort of a conclusion, some thinking. Maybe you will see that we will be raptured before any great struggle arises. And this is a real question because people with great minds have disagreed on this very point, but we can have a difficulty well before the rapture. I think it is only reasonable to have a supply of basic food stored up for times of difficulty, not only for the Great Tribulation, but for times of great difficulty. And if our country does go through a time of judgment, it just might be a hard and long time of difficulty. It's one of those uncertainties that we just don't know. I present these ideas to you to motivate you to form your own ideas and plans. Your ideas are the most important ones because they are yours. You will be more likely to act on these ideas than on mine. So think, plan, and then do. You can contact me if you want to, John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. And my email address is prepareforgod@usa.com, all lowercase, no spaces. I hope to hear your comments, questions, or suggestions, and that if you would like to have one of these one-hour DVDs, they are for sale at a cost of $10 each. Thank you for listening. This has been Preparedness Thoughts by John Stephenson. We invite Jesus Christ to the Holy Spirit to guide us as we examine how to preserve our own life and the lives of our family and others. Start your preparations now before there is an urgent need and what you want is hard to find. Remember to give thanks to God for the blessings that you do have.